Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Another mass shooting yesterday with 12 people killed at the Naval Office Building in Washington. We lived through so many of these that take your heart away and prompted these comments from the heart. Yesterday at a press briefing with the Chief Medical Officer of MedStar Washington Hospital Center, Dr. Janice Orlowski, that hospital treated some of yesterday's victims.
There's something evil in our society that we as Americans have to work to try and eradicate. I have to say, I may see this every day. I may, you know, be the chief medical officer of a very large trauma center, but there's something wrong here when we have these multiple shootings, these multiple injuries. There's something wrong. And the only thing that I can say is we have to work together to get rid of it.
So the question of this hour is, how do we do that? That's the focus of our hour with two guests who will pay special attention to what has happened in the 9 months since the Newtown shooting and the day since the Navy Yard shootings. Professor Adam Winkler will join us momentarily, a constitutional law professor and author of Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. And later in the show, Daniel Thompson, who is press secretary for the National Association for Gun Rights. We'll be welcoming phone calls from you. I'm sure we will get many, and here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org, and you can always leave messages for us on our Facebook page, which is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Professor Adam Winkler has joined us several times in the past, constitutional law professor at UCLA, author of Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. Professor Winkler, thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you for having me.
I was so moved by Dr. Orlowski's comments yesterday. I just happened to see them as I was leaving the building yesterday afternoon at the press conference. So let me start with what she said. There's something wrong, and the only thing I can say is we have to work together to get rid of it. Yet another mass shooting. There is something wrong. What's wrong?
Well, I wish I could say that I knew what was wrong. I think that a lot of people think part of the problem is that there are so many guns in America. There are 320 million guns approximately in America. We actually don't have an exact number because we've never kept statistics on such a thing. But we know that that stockpile is getting much larger every year. Last year, there were 20 million federal background checks done, and that's only a portion, maybe the majority of the gun purchasers, but still there's even that many more gun purchasers happening every single year. But I think if guns are the problem, and I'm not sure that they are, but if they are the problem, my sense is that we better get used to it, that with all those guns, they're not going anywhere. None of the kinds of gun control laws that are even being proposed by gun control advocates are likely to stop these kinds of mass killings. As a result, I think in some ways this is going to be the new normal.
So we have to live with this?
Well, I hate to say, I mean, I don't want to be the one who disempowers the spirit from trying to get reform, and I encourage people to organize and become more active on the gun issue for whatever your political beliefs are. You know, part of the story here, Kathleen, is that no gun control laws are really moving because really all of the energy in politics is on the gun rights side, that the gun control advocates lost a major recall election in Colorado 2 weeks ago. President Obama was not able to get his gun control proposals even passed through the Senate, much less the House of Representatives. And until those dynamics fundamentally shift, you're not going to see any new gun control laws. And I fear that whatever moderate gun control laws we're talking about really not going to eliminate the ability of a madman to get his hands on guns and shoot people.
Tell me what has happened on a state kind of basis since the Newtown shootings when people said this is enough, there has to be substantial change. Has there been movement in states, more background checks, or have we seen some states do some things and some states do quite the opposite?
Yeah, we've had, there has been movement at the state level, even while there wasn't movement at the federal level. But that movement might surprise you. There were four or five states that have gone in the direction of tightening their gun laws in the wake of Newtown. New York, Connecticut, Maryland, California's passing new legislation that's before the governor, Colorado. However, about a dozen states have gone the other way since Newtown, have made their gun laws more liberal, have eliminated traditional gun restrictions like laws barring guns in churches, laws barring bars in bars and restaurants. And there's a big push to now allow people to bring their guns at least into the parking lots of their employers. There has movement, but the movement has really depended on the state in which you're in. In a pro-gun rights state, we're seeing laws becoming ever more liberal, and in the pro-gun control states, the laws becoming more restrictive.
And yet more money and more conversation has come from the pro-gun control side. Bloomberg has poured a lot of money into various states, including Colorado, didn't he?
Well, I hate to admit it sometimes, but money doesn't control the outcome of all elections. Mm-hmm. Certainly money is a huge influence on elections, but, you know, in an American democracy, there is probably nothing more powerful than a group of people really committed to a political issue, who are willing to organize, to get out the vote, to write their senators and their congressmen. I remember in the run-up to the Obamacare proposals, and Senator Heidi Heitkamp said that even though 90% of the people said they supported background checks, in her office, the phone calls were running 7-1 against new background checks. So that's where the political energy is, and in a democracy, that's going to be rewarded.
Ammunition, semi-automatic rifles flying off the shelves of gun stores after Newtown.
Yes, that's right. We've seen skyrocketing gun sales. One of the unfortunate ironies of gun control proposals over the years is that they often inspire more people to go out and buy guns, or at least the current gun owners to go out and buy more guns. So the current concerns that gun owners had that we were going to restrict the sale of AR-15s, assault rifles, such as the weapon that was used just yesterday in the Washington Navy Yard. One of the three weapons was an AR-15. They went and bought these guns, and the prices skyrocketed on them because there was a huge run on these firearms. They wanted to get them before the sale was banned. The sale came into effect. So that is one of the unfortunate ironies. It does turn out that gun ownership overall is declining in America as a percentage of homes and the number of people relative to the population that are owning guns, but more people are owning more guns.
Mm-hmm. And what about this movement to have ballot initiatives in states that allow that rather than going through members of Congress or members of your state legislature?
Well, that has been a mechanism of direct democracy that Americans have embraced in many states for over 100 years. And it does provide a mechanism to get around impasses in the legislature. In fact, that was the very purpose of the initiative and referendum process. But if gun control advocates are going to go that direction, they should be careful. Historically, if you have all the political energy or most of the political energy on the other side, you may not want to open up a new forum for them to become more active, because perhaps they're going to win in that forum, too.
Going back to what the doctor said yesterday, there's something wrong here, and the only thing I have to say is that we have to work to get rid of it. It would seem to me as though almost everybody in America would be horrified about what they saw yesterday and just 9 months ago at Newtown and all of these mass shootings in the past couple of years, that almost everybody of good heart would say, there is something wrong. What can we do to keep this from happening?
That's right, and I think there is something wrong, and we see this, and it's something wrong with the human condition. It's something wrong with our society. It's something wrong with our laws. But the real question for us is, what does the decision tree look like in the future? What are our realistic options to try to reduce these kinds of incidents? I think we can do more to try to reduce these kinds of incidents. We do need things like better background checks. We do need things like better mental health reporting. And I don't know if it would have stopped this particular mass shooting, but we know that it might have prevented some of the others, or at least provided at least a warning in those situations. But realistically, we're not going to get rid of the 320 million guns. Maybe it's 340 million by the time we end this interview. I don't know. But we're not going to get rid of all those guns. So we have to come up with solutions that presume the guns are going to be there. We're going to see more armed guards, I predict, not only in schools, but in all sorts of public facilities. I think realistically, while that's not going to prevent these from occurring, it's more likely to be adopted through the political process than significant restrictions on access to guns.
We welcome phone calls. We'll have many of them, and we'll hear a couple viewpoints on this issue. Adam Winkler is joining us now, constitutional law professor at UCLA, author of Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. Daniel Thompson, who's press secretary for the National Association for Gun Rights, will join us the second half of this hour. Let's focus our attention on what we can do to work together to get rid of incidents like yesterday in Newtown and all that have happened in the past few years. They're sickening, and I'm sure are to every American. We don't want to see these happening over and over and over again. So no matter what you think about guns, what is the solution to keep this from happening all the time? Have we become immune to it? Is this what we live with now? Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, if you would like to leave messages there, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. And we start our calls with Mike in Eau Claire. Hello, Mike.
Hello, is this for Mike?
Yes, this is you, Mike. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. I just got back from Australia, and can you believe that they have not twice or five or ten times, but 32 times less the homicide rate than we do? And the reason is directly related to their gun laws. They outlawed guns for everybody but policemen and some hunters. And if you're caught with a gun, and especially in a big city, it's an automatic fine or felony. What we need is to educate the American public that it's not the answer, complete answer, but it's a big one. If you have guns, they'll kill children, and children will kill children. Get rid of the damn guns. That's the problem.
Adam Winkler.
Yeah, well, I can't speak to the validity of the caller's statements with regards to Australia. It didn't correspond exactly with my understanding of firearms laws there, but I'm not an expert on Australia. So I will say that there is more education that we need to do. I think the fact that we haven't been able to get things like universal background checks, when I think most gun owners would support the idea of ensuring that people who have mental health problems or who have criminal convictions not get their hands on guns. One question that is raised by this this event at the Washington Navy Yard, this horrible incident, is that Mr. Alexis apparently had some previous arrest for gun crimes.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't convictions. If they're not felony convictions, it's not going to put you on the prohibited purchasers list. But there is a real question. There's a lot of research that shows that people who are arrested for minor gun crimes are later on much more likely, sometimes 8 or 9 times more likely, to actually commit a violent offense than someone who isn't. And so maybe we need to think more expansively about how we define who is a dangerous person who shouldn't have access to guns.
Thank you, Mike, for your call. Jim in Rice Lake. Hi.
Hi. I believe it was Jack Kennedy who once said the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. It's clear that socially and politically we have chosen to sacrifice public safety for either the privilege or the pleasure of owning guns. And therefore, we should not be shocked about what happened yesterday. It's going to happen again, probably a month from now. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Adam.
Well, there's a certain cynicism to the call that I unfortunately share. I do think that this is something that we're going to have to get used to. The truth is that it's not really on the rise. You know, there have been mass shootings for a long, long time, and we've averaged between 15 and 25 mass shootings pretty consistently since the early to mid-1970s. So we are seeing a lot of especially deadly ones. I think 7 of the 12 most deadly mass shootings have occurred in the last decade or so. So we are seeing some especially violent ones. But the real question is, what can we do to change it? What is a proposal that would fundamentally change our gun policy? I mean, we're not going to get rid of all the guns. We tried to get rid of alcohol and prohibition. That didn't work. We tried to get rid of drugs and the war on drugs, and that's been a pretty huge failure that's done little but support our prison industry. So I don't think that there's any realistic option of getting rid of the guns. And so as a result, we got to start looking at other solutions, better laws to keep the people who shouldn't have guns from getting guns, more armed guards in places where there are public is going to gather. And I think that those are the kinds of solutions we hopefully can see in the next 5-10 years.
Annalisa in Green Bay. Hi.
Hi. I've heard you before on this show, and I've always thought that you always made me think, and I'm sorry to actually hear where you're at right now. But my concern or my point is, what about money? I mean, the pro-gun people, it's being run by the gun industry, and there is so much money being poured into these campaigns. So I realize I agree with you. Money isn't always the issue, but there's such a big imbalance. And the other issue is the issue of reelection. These politicians are terrified of the gun lobby. They're terrified they won't get reelected if they don't support their legislation. And so I just wonder what your thoughts are about that in terms of making any changes. Thank you.
Thank you for the call.
What a terrific call, and thank you so much. I do think there are things that can be done. There are some things with regards to the political issues that can be done. But it must mean that people who support gun control, presumably like the caller, they need to become more politically active. So when we think about the gun enthusiasts, you know what they have in common that the gun control people don't? Is that they really have this love of firearms. And so they have, they go to the same web pages and they read the same magazines and they go and they have these activities like going to the range and shooting, and they belong to gun clubs. And it's like a culture of people who really communicate and who can spread information and become really politically active. I don't think that the gun industry or the NRA has so much money because those who support gun rights are the most powerful, wealthiest interests in America, or the big corporations. I think exactly the opposite. It's really from the grassroots. A lot of grassroots money is going into the NRA and into this kind of political activism. And I think that if the gun control side gets activated and really becomes committed to making a change, then it's going to require serious political activism and organization. And that's the only thing that's really going to counter that political impact.
And don't you think, Adam, that some of that has happened, or we wouldn't have seen the movement since Newtown to allow guns in churches, elementary schools, casinos, college campuses, et cetera?
Well, it has happened in some places, and we have seen some political activism. Mayor Bloomberg has become much more committed to putting money behind election contests that involve the gun issue. Had a successful effort in Illinois where they were able in a primary election to defeat a pro-gun Democrat. Unfortunately, the Bloomberg people weren't strong enough to defeat this recall in Colorado, where these two state representatives who supported universal background checks were both recalled in a popular election. The first recalls in Colorado history, and I think it's really going to send a signal. For the last year or so, we've heard a lot of people on the gun control side say that the NRA is a paper tiger. And we might all like to believe that, but I just don't think it's accurate. And I think what happened in Colorado is a good show of that. The gun rights people are seriously politically active, and if the gun control people want to defeat them, they need to be equally as politically active, if not more so.
And what about turnout in those elections? Were there a lot of people who voted?
Well, in recall elections, it's not a general election. There's not a lot of seats that are up, and so you get obviously much less turnout. But that only favors the side that's the most intense. You know, when 90% of the people support background checks but aren't really going to vote on that basis, they're really no match for the 10% of people who say that is the only thing that I am going to use to determine who I'm going to vote for and who I'm going to contribute to and who I'm going to go get out the vote for. And that's really powerful.
Thanks, Annalisa, for your call. We go next to John in Highland. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
The subject that I'm interested in and very emotional about, the idea of living in a heavily armed society is abhorrent to me, especially because my parents were victims of the Holocaust during World War II. So the whole subject of an armed society is abhorrent. But the point I was going to make is about the idea that a well-armed society is a safe society. And I think about this when I'm driving, and I notice how people drive. I'd say 40% of people are responsible drivers who think about the trajectory they're going and who's around them. Another 30% are mindless, and I think I have 30% left now. And the other 30% are actually aggressive and hostile drivers. And they're all licensed by the state and all trained. That's it.
All right, Adam.
Well, it does show you that maybe training and licensing by the government with regards to guns is not going to be as effective. I do think that there's just a certain trade-off that we make. We've decided to give people the right to keep and bear arms for personal protection. It's in the Constitution. Courts have held that for years. The Supreme Court recently endorsed that view. Even without that view being endorsed by the Supreme Court, we still got 300 million guns in circulation in America. It's really just deeply ingrained in American culture that people are going to have access to guns. And just like access to cars means that there's going to be accidents and there's going to be fatalities, I think that, you know, we're facing the same situation. It's a public health problem, and we should look at it not in terms of can we eliminate mass shootings. That would be great if we could do that. Norway has extensive gun control laws. They had the worst mass shooting in human history just a couple years ago. It would be great if that was the be-all, end-all answer. It's not. We need to start working hard to figure out what kind of laws we can have that are better to keep the wrong people from having guns. How can we improve our mental health system so that less people have the desire to do this? And in some ways, as I started, get used to, unfortunately, the fact that this is, in some ways, a new normal.
We'll take more phone calls in a moment. We're talking about guns and how we, well, we're talking about how do we keep yet another mass shooting from taking place, or are we living because of a variety of circumstances that Adam Winkler outlined for us in a society where this is the new normal? Is this what we just get used to? We are talking with Adam Winkler. We're also spending a bit of time focusing on what happened last week in Colorado. Two state senators who had backed stronger gun laws lost recall elections, and there are other states. In Nevada, there's a recall campaign that has begun against State Senator Justin Jones, who led successful passage in June of a bill to strengthen background checks. So some states are moving toward a little bit more restrictive, particularly when it comes to background checks. Other states are going in a completely different direction. Here's our number. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Adam Winkler with us for a few more minutes, and then we will speak with the press secretary for the National Association for Gun Rights. Connor in Green Bay is next. Hi, Connor.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I guess the main thing I want to bring up, and you kind of touched on it right as you headed to the break, is the mental health aspect here. I mean, it may be a bit callous or oversimplifying to say this, but the shootings themselves, to me, are not what the point where you can prevent something from happening. I mean, I could take a car and crash it into a school or a library. Or, I mean, I would never consider such a thing, but those avenues are available, sort of, quote, weapons of medium destruction, if you will. You know, I think that we have this stigma, at least in America, that mental health is somehow different from physical health. You wouldn't feel ashamed of yourself to go in for a sprained ankle to see a doctor, but there's this stigma that mental health, we're still kind of overcoming this maybe more male-dominated, I don't know, macho idea that mental health, you're somehow weak if you need that help. I have a lot of family that work as mental health professionals, and, you know, they talk about this, that they're always happy when people can come in and get past that potential roadblock. And the mental health is the area we need to focus on, I believe, first.
Adam Winkler.
Well, it's a very good point. You know, our current law does provide that some people who have mental health problems are prohibited from purchasing a firearm. However, those mental health problems have to be adjudicated. So you have to have a court declare someone either incompetent or a danger to themselves or others before that kicks in. And there has been some discussion since Newtown. You know, maybe that's waiting too long after someone gets a court adjudication. Maybe you need to have some safeguards in place where someone who's clearly mentally ill, but not adjudicated mentally ill, like a Jared Lochner or the shooter in Newtown, or perhaps even the shooter at the Washington Navy Yard. There's still more details to come. That's something that would signal, and so that you can start some kind of investigation and make sure that person is an appropriate person to have firearms. However, there are some significant privacy issues that we really have to deal with and address. Do we want someone who goes to get mental health counseling to be subject now to losing some of their constitutional rights just because they went and saw counseling? What is the exact standard? The good thing about the adjudication standard is at least it's a clear-cut rule where the person has had due process of law before they're denied that constitutional right. We need to be very careful where we draw the line elsewhere, but it is perhaps time that we start thinking about what are those options and when can we try to get access to someone who is mentally ill and prevent them from having access themselves to firearms.
The thing is, when you look at what's happening from state to state, every state is treating this in a completely different fashion, right? So if you have the desire to really try to get rid of these kinds of horrendous events and these kinds of shootings, then you need to examine it with all your heart and soul and your mind and look at all aspects of this. Instead, we're looking at just a completely different set of legislation that addresses some of the issues that don't get to what the major concern is. How do we get rid of this kind of violence?
That's right. And it's unlikely that state-level regulation is really going to achieve much. Mm. You know, you can't blame places who want to do more to try to keep guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have access to guns. But because the gun laws vary so much from state to state, and guns are easily transported, concealed across state lines, there's just this huge built-in loophole to any state's restrictive gun laws. You need regulation at the federal level. Only the federal government can really enact laws that are going to apply across the country. But currently, the politics of the federal government are, as we all know, very, very unfavorable to gun control.
Right. So finally, as somebody who has written a book, Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America, and who deals with this issue all the time and thinks about it pretty deeply, when you woke up yesterday and heard there was another mass shooting, and it dominated the news all day yesterday, and we're hearing much more about it today, but then it will fade away probably, what did you think?
Here we go again.
Really?
I mean, what else is there to think? I mean, it's not a surprise. I was thinking that, you know what, I'd probably end up doing a lot of interviews over the next 48 hours. That's the unfortunate reality, is that it just seems like, once again, we're back in the situation. And it doesn't surprise me anytime this kind of thing happens. We've just seen a lot of them lately, and it doesn't look like it's going to stop anytime in the near future.
Thank you, Adam Winkler, so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Adam Winkler is a constitutional law professor at UCLA, and he is author of Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. We are going to continue our conversation with a different point of view. The press secretary for the National Association for Gun Rights will join us, Daniel Thompson. Keeping in mind the theme of the hour, what is it we can do to work together to get rid of horrendous events like what happened yesterday at the Naval Office Building in Washington, D.C. And we're welcoming phone calls. Our lines have been extremely busy. Here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Daniel Thompson, press secretary for the National Association for Gun Rights. Hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. We framed this hour in terms of what the doctor at the MedStar Washington Hospital Center, the chief medical officer of that facility, said yesterday, which so we're framing the hour. What is it that we can do, that all of us need to do, to work together to get rid of events like yesterday? Mm-hmm. How would you answer that?
I would answer that in saying that there are laws in the book on place to deter such events from happening. But, you know, no law was going to stop what happened yesterday, and that's the sad thing. And so my heart goes out to the, you know, to all of D.C. and to everyone affected by this tragedy and this evil. The shooting happened in a gun-free city, in a gun-free building, and no new gun control bill would have stopped this shooting from happening. And what could have stopped this shooting from happening is if a law-abiding gun owner was allowed to carry the tools of self-defense to protect himself or herself and the surrounding public.
So when you heard the news that came in yesterday, mm-hmm. what went through your mind?
Oh, I was so saddened by it. You know, no one likes to see anything like this happen. And, you know, for someone to go in there and you know, totally disregard a human life is the utmost evil, I believe. And, you know, that's what, you know, I believe. That's what everyone here at the National Association for Gun Rights believes. So what we really advocate for is, you know, for people to have the tools of self-defense, to be able to carry guns and defend themselves and defend their families and defend their homes and the rest of the public.
And is that, will that take care of the issue, do you think, that will take care of these mass shootings?
You know, what would really take care of this issue is if people could defend themselves. And like I said, D.C. is a gun-free city, and we've seen, you know, cities that have, you know, high murder rates are cities that are gun-free. And so our solution is more people being able to take their safety and their protections in their own hands.
What about the issue of mental health checks for people? Do you think that we are as careful as we need to be when people are buying guns to check to see their mental state of health?
Well, there already are laws in place that deem certain people as unallowed. They're unallowed to buy guns, to purchase guns, because of things they've done in the past and their mental health state by mental health professionals and doctors. But we don't support any law that impedes on the rights of gun owners and law-abiding gun owners. We don't think any bureaucrat should have the right to strip a law-abiding gun owner of their gun rights simply for someone saying they think they could be dangerous. And mental health professionals agree with us on that position as well.
Last week, two state senators who had backed stronger gun laws lost recall elections in the state of Colorado. Were you involved in that recall election? Were you supporting the recall?
Yes, we were. We are actually based in Windsor, Colorado, so this issue kind of hit home with us as well. So what we essentially did is we aided the grassroots effort and by simply informing our members and supporters throughout Colorado through TV ads, through radio ads, email newsletters, and social media, just informing them that John Morse and Angela Harone have not listened to their constituents on any of the issues relating to the gun thing. Earlier this spring, during the legislative session in Colorado, the Democrats pushed through a raft of gun control bills, including the expanded background checks, tax on all new gun purchases, and a ban on magazines over 15 rounds, despite the constituents overwhelmingly telling their representatives and senators to vote no on these bills. So in direct defiance of the wishes of their constituents, the Colorado senators, John Morse and Angela Harone, passed these radical anti-gun bills in the Colorado legislature this year. And the grassroots effort, what you saw is the grassroots efforts of Coloradans resulting in the first ever recall election in the state's history.
I guess the last half hour would have said that it wasn't necessarily that the majority of constituents believe that. It was 10% of the people who feel very, very strongly about this issue as their number one priority and will do everything in their power to make sure they vote.
Well, in order to even have a recall election, you have to have a certain number of people on the petition to get this recall election even on the ballot. And that's what happened here. You had constituents rising up, basically the peasants picking up their pitchforks and storming the castle against government overreach. And that's what happened here in the state of Colorado. And the recall has never been successful. It's never occurred in our state's history. And so this wasn't just a minority of people who have one issue that they care about. This is the vast majority of Coloradans.
There is, as you well know, after Newtown, there's been a movement to examine the role that guns may play in our society. And you reach a point, that shooting in particular, where people said there's something really wrong here. And 9 months later, to have another mass shooting that dominates the media that is committed with guns, that makes people wonder about guns and about mental health and about background checks and about behavior on the part of some of these people that should be questionable and has you wonder whether or not they should have guns. Is that a fair debate and soul-searching for America to have, or have we gone way too far, do you think?
I believe that what needs to be examined is, I'm all for people, that are have committed something in the past that are not law-abiding, that are prohibited persons not being able to have a gun. And I agree with that statement. But I do not agree with stripping law-abiding gun owners of their constitutional rights and adding them to a prohibited list from being able to obtain a gun for some other, you know, straw purchase, straw man argument in this case.
And all kinds of guns.
All kinds of guns, yeah.
All right, let's welcome phone calls. Our guest this half hour is Daniel Thompson, press secretary for the National Association for Gun Rights. We are talking about, well, a lot of things have happened. There was another mass shooting yesterday, but actually we were going to do this program before yesterday's mass shooting took place because the focus was going to be, and we're still talking about what happened in Colorado last week, where two state senators who backed stronger gun laws lost recall elections. There are other people who are being targeted in other states for taking similar kind of legislative action, but we're adding, you can't ignore what happened yesterday, so that dimension is also on the table with a question what it is we need to do together, no matter what you feel about guns, if this is a possibility to keep things from happening as what happened again yesterday, or is that just part of the way America is now? What do you think? We'll take more phone calls, and let's go to Gary in Racine next. Hi, Gary.
Hi, good afternoon. Say, my concern is, are we portraying this in the media as some sort of a big event and people copycat? Now, we have to assume that these people see these things in different parts of the country and think, well, you know what, I'll go out in a blaze of glory too, just because of the rapid rise of this number of things. We have to watch out with the mental health issue. Having sought mental health for my own self, I would hate to think that I'm going to go onto some sort of a list for the federal government, and the federal government is going to know those are privacy issues. Now, it goes on and on. And you could say, well, we already see with the NSA and their overreach on the emails and things, and it just goes on and on. So the less we give to the government and the less that the media somehow comes in and plays a role in this, the better off we're going to be. If the media would just, this is a local issue, it doesn't affect somebody in the lower part of California, it does not affect those people. I mean, unless you have a family relative or something like that.
So you're saying that the media should not report on 13 people being shot at the Navy Yard?
I am saying that the national media has no reason to report on that.
You agree with that, Daniel?
What I would say is, you know, I think what he addresses, having the mental health bill is what he was talking about initially. And that's what I would like to address. Saying that what this essentially does is, say you go in, say your mom dies, you go in and seek, you know, voluntary mental health treatment. Well, you could be considered, you know, you could have a bureaucrat strip you of your law, you know, your rights, and you're law abiding. You're not a criminal. So I think that's what he's going on talking about. He doesn't want his private information being known to the government, to our government, to our federal government, basically putting you on a de facto list. And so without adjudication, you don't want your rights stripped of you just for seeking voluntary mental health treatment. And that's the bill he was referencing.
You're saying that's widespread, that if you have sought mental health treatment at some point in your life, you can't get a gun?
That's what he was referring to, the mental health bill that's been trying to be passed in different states and federally.
Do you see that as a significant problem?
I see it as a problem when the government reaches in and takes away the rights of law-abiding gun owners. Yes, I do.
But do you see that as a problem, that there are a lot of people who have sought mental health treatment who can no longer purchase guns?
Yes, I don't think anyone who is law-abiding should go on a prohibited list and then, you know, and then into the NICS system simply for seeking mental health treatment. I think it's also will deter people from seeking mental health treatment if they know that the government can ultimately take their gun rights away and put them in a national registry.
Who should go on that list?
That's what I'm saying. I don't think this bill should go.
No, who should be prohibited from owning a gun?
Criminals, people with paths that have gone against the laws that we currently have in the books. So that's where I think should go on there, not law-abiding gun owners.
More phone calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this part of this hour is Daniel Thompson, press secretary for the National Association for Gun Rights. And let us go next to Eric in Shawano. Hi, Eric. Are you there, Eric? Call us back. I don't know where you are. Betsy in Fitchburg. Hi.
Hi. I'm glad I got on. It's very fitting, this topic and everything, not just for what happened at the Navy Yard, but I got my Walmart flyer yesterday and opened it up and found out that I can buy a $15,000 rifle with, quote, Knights Armament Quad Rail. And when I looked that up, it said that it's, and I'm quoting, the finest in military and law enforcement weapon platforms. Why is a gun like that on sale at Walmart? Shouldn't, like, a trained military or law officer be using such a thing? Why does the average citizen need that?
Daniel?
There, you know, just simply put, these aren't fully automatic weapons. These are weapons that, you know, basically one shot can, it's just a one shot thing. And so I think what we need to keep in perspective is this is a knee jerk reaction that more gun control laws are going to stop these shootings when in fact you're just disarming law abiding gun owners from having the tools of self defense. So it doesn't depend on the gun and the look of the gun, whether it appears scary or not. So that doesn't play into the fact of, you know, shootings or any other instance that you can relate right now.
But certainly there's a difference between how many people you can kill depending on what kind of weapon you have, right? Daniel?
One shot can do damage. It doesn't matter the size of the weapon. I mean, this is a fact.
Betsy, you have something else to say?
Yeah, if it doesn't matter, then why do we even have to have that for sale? I'll use the argument back. If we've
because
already got rifles out there that can shoot so they can go hunting, wonderful, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like you said, people go hunting, but the other weapons, I mean, these are people go to the range and shoot guns. I mean, this is a hobby. This is something fun. This isn't something people, you know, purchase to create mayhem. This is something that people use for protection. This is something that you go to the gun range and shoot. You know, I've shot at, you know, I've gone to, you know, machine gun shooting events and shot those. I mean, this is, and collectors collect all sorts of neat guns, and they buy accessories for their guns. This is just something, you know, and the gun people, gunnies like to do. I don't think it has anything to come into play in how many people you're going to kill with it, because, you know, one shot can kill somebody.
Thanks for the call, Betsy. Let's go to Eric and Shawano. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Can
sure.
you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Here was my point that I wanted to make. I've been a probation and parole officer for 17 years, and I've come across a lot of people, obviously, who are not law-abiding. But I wanted to make a point to your speaker when she talks about law-abiding people or law-abiding gun owners. There's also a distinction between that and responsible gun owners. My proposition, and it's not a silver bullet, no pun intended, to this entire incident happening, but one idea that I had would be that you would require gun safes and gun vaults from all new gun purchasers. I know that there is no enforcement mechanism to go around making sure the owner uses it, but typically if you're going to spend $500 on a good gun safe or vault, you're probably going to use it. And when you do that, you limit access to unauthorized people getting hold of these guns. I can't tell you how many people I've supervised on probation who were involved in the burglary of unsecured firearms from law-abiding gun owners. But I would not say that those gun owners were responsible gun owners. They did not secure their weapons. A criminal got a hold of them. They may have or may not have been used in the commission of a crime. But once again, you're talking about firearms ending up in the wrong hands because a gun owner who may be law-abiding was irresponsible. That's my point.
Thanks for the call, Eric. What do you think, Daniel?
Oh, I mean, everyone at my work, we all have gun safe, gun vaults. I think that's a great investment. That, you know, I don't think it should be a requirement, but I think that's a great investment. That's a great point. That is, you don't want anyone, you know, getting hold of your gun. You don't want anyone coming into your home and stealing your gun. That's also why we don't want gun owners having their information public or to the federal government and that list leaking, because we don't want criminals knowing who has guns. We don't want them going into those homes and trying to steal those guns. So that is a good point.
Marcus in Green Bay. Hi.
Hi. I called originally to say that I felt like I was becoming desensitized. The last question you asked your prior guest, Mr. Winkler, was, you know, what did he think when he saw it on the news this morning? And he took the words right out of my mouth, which was, here we go again. And I guess I'd like to add something to that is, I think as far as another caller, you know, about these things being sensationalized, maybe they shouldn't show the perpetrator, the person that did it. They flash his picture all over the news. They do all this background. They interview a waitress who knew him 3 months ago and how he's a nice guy. I think they just shouldn't show the person and then give him that moment of glory for the next person to do that copycat thing. And then I'd like to ask your guest how she feels about this individual shooting the tires out of a car, shooting his gun off through the ceiling. Doesn't that qualify for he shouldn't be able to buy any more guns? He just shouldn't be allowed to have guns just through sheer stupidity, let alone the mental illness aspect.
He had, you know, prior infractions, and that's something that, yeah, when you have prior infractions, you should absolutely be looked at and scrutinized before you are allowed to get a gun.
Thanks, Marcus, for the call. And let's go to Eric in Madison. Hi. Eric?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering, you know, your guest had mentioned that one of the things that can be done about helping out with these situations is to make sure people are free to arm themselves and to be armed to defend themselves. And I myself believe in personal freedoms to a great degree. However, I question the relevance of thinking that people being armed to defend themselves can help a situation like this in looking at what happened yesterday at a naval yard. And I ask that question because I honestly don't know. Like, were people armed at a Navy yard? And would having them being armed, did that help the situation at all? Because it seemed if there were plenty of people armed there, then it didn't help.
Daniel?
Yeah, this is, like I said, it was a gun-free city, gun-free building, so no, guns were not allowed by personnel in the building.
Are you sure about that? I had heard on the news yesterday
There were security guards, military police, but no other personnel were allowed to have guns on the premises.
Okay. Thank you, Eric, very much for the call. One more call. Ellen in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hello. I just have one simple question, and I just can't understand why it is so reprehensible to gun people that everyone should have a background check when they buy a gun. How do we know a man is a felon if we don't check his background?
The man who committed the shooting yesterday, he had a top security clearance. So the government knew everything about him. And how would these new gun laws focus on law-abiding individuals stop gun violence? It won't. The government knew everything about this man. He had a top security clearance, top secret security clearance, and that did not stop him. So what I'm saying would stop him is, you know, law-abiding gunners should have their guns. Like you saw in Colorado, swing state, in these highly Democratic districts, these two senators were recalled for government overreach and stripping and trying to strip and restrict the gun rights of law-abiding gun owners throughout the state.
But you would have to agree, Daniel, that there is a great diversity of opinion on this particular issue in this country among Americans, right? Is there a way, do you think, for people who are on a different wavelength than you are to get together to address issues of mass shootings, et cetera? We only have about 20 seconds. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, I hear the other side all the time in their arguments, and we have our arguments as well.
Okay.
And why there should be guns.
Thanks very much for being with us. Daniel Thompson, Press Secretary for the National Association for Gun Rights. We also thank Adam Winkler, Constitutional Law Professor at UCLA, author of Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. So thanks to Rhonda Fanning and KP Whaley for producing this hour. Thanks for all of your calls, everybody. It's an issue that we hate to have to talk about. I hate it when events like this happen, but it's necessary. And so thank you for responding. Stay with us. We're going to be talking about a wonderful event now in its third year in downtown Milwaukee, which takes place this Saturday and Sunday. It's worth coming to town for this. So we'll hear all about it right after the latest news.